All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a look at People v. Walker. This case is really interesting. It brings up some tricky legal questions about some pretty fundamental concepts, you know, especially for all you law students out there. We're talking about burglary, intent, and the felony murder rule, and all kinds of interesting stuff.
Yeah, and this case is a bit of a head-scratcher, you know, at first glance at least. I mean, one of the big questions is, can you actually burglarize something that's illegal? And then there's the whole issue of whether a death during a crime automatically bumps it up to first-degree murder, you know, even if the guy claims he was trying to back out.
Yeah, like how do you define abandonment in that kind of situation? It's a lot to unpack.
Right. So to really dig into this, we've got a few different sources. We're looking at some expert analysis from a podcast that covers the case, a super detailed legal brief, and then a more standard case summary.
Okay, so let's start with the basics. What exactly was Walker trying to steal and what happened?
So Walker was caught red-handed trying to make off with some illegal slot machines.
Illegal slot machines.
Yep. And during the whole attempted getaway, there was a confrontation with the police, and sadly, an officer ended up getting killed.
Okay, so that's where the felony murder rule comes into play. But first, let's break down this whole concept of burglarizing something that's illegal. I mean, it sounds kind of counterintuitive. If something's already illegal, how can you steal it?
Right, right. And that's exactly what Walker's defense tried to argue. They were basically saying, look, burglary requires the intent to steal property, but these slot machines are contraband. They're not property in the legal sense. It's a pretty clever argument when you think about it.
It is. So how did the court respond to that?
Well, the court wasn't buying it. They looked beyond the legal status of the slot machines themselves. They focused more on the fact that, illegal or not, someone had possession of them.
So it's not about whether the thing itself is legal, but whether someone has a recognized right to possess it.
Exactly. The court basically said, even though these machines were illegal, the person who had them still had certain limited rights over them.
So, like, what kind of rights are we talking about here?
Think of it as a bundle of rights or a bundle of interests, as is sometimes said. Like, even if you can't legally sell those slot machines or use them to gamble, you could still choose to destroy them, right?
Okay, I see. You still have control over what happens to them, even if they're illegal.
Right. Or you could voluntarily surrender them to the authorities. The point is, you have a right to possess and control them, even if they're contraband. And the court said that's enough to establish a property interest that can be protected under the law.
Interesting. So it's not about full ownership in the traditional sense, but rather this bundle of interest and the right to possess.
Yeah, and the court actually quoted something pretty interesting, and I quote, "There are no property rights innate in objects themselves."
Okay.
"Such rights as there are in certain persons as against others." So basically, it's about the relationship between a person and the thing, not just the thing itself.
So even if the law says, hey, you shouldn't have this, someone else can't just come and take it without consequence. There are still legal protections in place, even when it comes to possession of illegal items.
Exactly. Burglary is about violating someone's possessory rights, regardless of whether the item itself is legal or not. And the court had some really compelling reasons for taking this stance. They were worried about the broader implications. What do you think would happen if the law essentially gave a free pass to anyone who wanted to steal illegal goods from each other?
It sounds like it would be a recipe for chaos. You know, like criminals robbing criminals, operating outside the law completely. There would be no stability or predictability.
Precisely. You'd essentially have this whole underground system where disputes were settled through theft and potentially violence. It would make it incredibly difficult to maintain any kind of order or enforce the law effectively.
And wouldn't that undermine the role of law enforcement?
Exactly. And the court really emphasized that point. They said, and again, I'm quoting here, if one were allowed by law to take the illegal gains of another, it would obstruct the administration of justice. So they're basically saying allowing this would create more problems than it would solve. It would actually hinder the ability of the legal system to function properly.
So even criminals have some basic legal protections when it comes to possession, especially when it comes to protecting against other criminals. That's a really interesting takeaway.
It is. And it touches on some really fundamental principles about how the legal system is supposed to work.
Now, our standard brief also mentions another case, People v. Rosen.
Yeah, People v. Rosen. It's a bit different, but it helps clarify some things.
What was the distinction there?
Well, in Rosen, the guy was actually trying to get back his own money that he had lost gambling illegally.
Ah, I see.
So he had a prior claim to those specific funds. Walker, on the other hand, had no such connection to these slot machines. He was just trying to take them because they were there and he thought he could get away with it.
Okay, that's a key difference. So the court's saying there's a distinction between someone trying to reclaim something they believe is rightfully theirs and someone just trying to capitalize on the illegal nature of the goods.
Exactly. There has to be a connection. All right, so moving on to the second big issue here, the felony murder rule.
Right, so Walker's defense also argued that he had abandoned the burglary before the police officer was killed, so he shouldn't be held liable for the death under the felony murder rule. What's the court's perspective on that?
So the felony murder rule is pretty straightforward in theory. Basically, it means that if someone dies during the commission of a dangerous felony, the person committing the felony can be charged with murder, even if they didn't intend to kill anyone. Burglary, as you know, is one of those felonies.
Right. And Walker was saying, look, I was already out of there. I had abandoned the burglary.
Right. But the court's interpretation of abandonment is very specific. They basically said, for abandonment to count, it has to be voluntary. It can't be because you got caught or because the police showed up.
So, like, if someone decides in the middle of a burglary, you know what? This is a bad idea. I'm out of here.
Right.
That could be considered voluntary abandonment.
Potentially.
But if you're running because you hear sirens, that doesn't count.
Nope. Because in that case, you're not really abandoning the crime. You're just trying to avoid getting caught. The felony is still ongoing as far as the court is concerned.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
And in Walker's case?
Well, he was still on the property trying to get away from the police when the officer was killed. So the court said the burglary was still very much in progress. They didn't buy the whole abandonment argument because his actions were clearly driven by the fact that he'd been caught, not by a genuine change of heart.
So it's not just about whether the person was physically still in the act of breaking in or stealing at the exact moment of the death. It's about whether the whole criminal enterprise, including the attempted escape, was still going on.
Exactly. The reason for stopping the crime has to come from the defendant's own free will, not because of external factors like the police arriving. And, you know, it's interesting because I think the court's stance on contraband earlier plays into this as well. Remember how they said there's still a property interest even in illegal things? Well, that means the initial act of trying to take those slot machines still holds a lot of weight.
Well, that's a good point. It makes it harder to argue that you were simply walking away from a situation that had no legal significance.
Right. It adds another layer to the whole analysis. All right. Now, Walker's defense also tried to claim insanity.
Right. So what was the legal standard there? And how did the court rule on that?
So at that time, California used what's called the Imnotten test for insanity. And actually, a lot of places still use it today.
And what does that test involve?
Well, it basically boils down to two questions. Did the defendant understand what they were doing? And did they know that it was wrong? So, you know, it really focuses on their mental state at the time of the crime.
Okay, so did the court agree that Walker was legally insane under this standard?
No, they didn't. Both sides presented expert testimony, and the court sided with the prosecution's experts who said that Walker was sane at the time of the crime.
What led them to that conclusion?
Well, they pointed to a few things. First, Walker had clearly planned this burglary. Like, it wasn't just a spur-of-the-moment thing. He had put some thought and effort into it. That suggests he understood what he was doing, right?
Yeah.
And second, he tried to run from the police.
Which implies he knew he had done something wrong.
Exactly. He was trying to avoid the consequences of his actions. So that also points towards sanity. The court was basically saying, look, this guy understood what he was doing and knew it was wrong, so we can't say he was legally insane.
So just to clarify, having a mental illness doesn't automatically mean you're legally insane.
No, not at all. You can have a mental illness and still be considered legally sane. It really comes down to whether, at the time of the crime, you understood the nature of your actions and whether you knew they were wrong.
Okay, so it's a very specific legal standard focused on cognitive understanding. So just to recap the three main legal principles that came out of People v. Walker.
Sure. So first, you can absolutely commit burglary, even if the thing you're stealing is contraband. The possessor has a right to that property as against everyone but the state.
Second, to claim abandonment of a felony and get out of a felony murder charge, you have to genuinely and voluntarily give up on the crime. Simply running from the cops doesn't cut it.
And third, the insanity defense under the Imnotten test requires proving that the defendant either didn't understand what they were doing or didn't know that it was wrong. And evidence like planning the crime or trying to escape can really work against that defense.
Right. And we also talked about how the court's ruling on the contraband issue isn't just about legal technicalities. It's about preventing a situation where criminals can steal from each other without consequences.
Yeah, it's about maintaining some kind of order, even in the underworld.
So People v. Walker is really a great example of how property law, criminal law, and legal definitions of intent all intersect.
It is, and it leaves us with something to ponder. How does this whole case change the way we think about what property really is in the eyes of the law? It clearly goes beyond just stuff that's legally obtained. What about other scenarios involving illegal activities and possessions?
Like stolen goods, for example. If someone has something that was already stolen, do they have any rights against someone else trying to steal it from them? It's a tricky question.
Right, it really makes you think. And that's what makes this case so fascinating. It forces us to grapple with these really nuanced questions about possession, ownership, and the legal system's attempts to maintain order, even in the shadiest of circumstances.
Definitely a lot to chew on there. So, for all you listeners out there, we encourage you to keep exploring these topics. The felony murder rule and the insanity defense are both super complex areas of law with lots of interesting arguments and case law to discover.
Absolutely. Thanks for tuning in to The Deep Dive.